an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
My wife is part of this world. She never thought, like, she's a documentary filmmaker. Like, she was running around the country shooting tornado documentaries or filming a bariatric surgery for Discovery. And now she's running a group. We bring our life experiences to the table. And I think that openness and curiosity is what's made Deb really great at what she does, whether it's the book or the group. And it's a journey that we're all on, and we sort of all know how it's going to end, but there's a lot of fun we can have in the meantime and a lot of laughs. And I don't think it should be something that should be ignored, and we don't need to chastise our kids for laughing about when the kids make a funny noise and our mother-in-law replicates it. And maybe she wouldn't have done that 20 years ago, but God knows she has a great audience and two little kids. So it could be bittersweet is the perfect word. It's bittersweet. And yeah, it's sort of the life we find ourselves in.
Dementia Discussions. Here to help and empower our heroic caregivers with knowledge and experience. Dementia Discussions with the caregivers themselves and memory loss professionals. Here to help with 30 years as a geriatric social worker is your Dementia Discussions host, Barbara Hammond.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Discussions. I'm Barbara Hammond. Today on the show, my guest is Adam Steinman. Adam and I have never met before, so it's great to meet you, Adam.
Great meeting you.
Yeah, Adam will be here talking about his mother-in-law, so interesting perspective, and his grandmother. Adam, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
No, it's great to be here. And I'm a longtime listener. And I think perspective-wise, I've heard so much from caregivers, families, whether it's the son-in-law, or also I'm the grandson of my grandmother, Jean, in Montreal, has been living with Alzheimer's for almost, she's mid-90s for almost 20 years. So definitely come from a different point of view.
It's a long time. I actually met your mother-in-law a long time ago. This was when she was living in her own apartment before she moved. So she's in a much different place now, but let's just start from the beginning.
She's an incredibly vibrant, independent woman. Grew up on the East Coast and had a great career. And like a lot of East Coasters who were tired of the winter, made her way to Hollywood, not to pursue acting, but with the promise of everything California had to offer back then, and had my wife in the mid 70s. But more than most people I know, just a wildly independent and independently minded and progressive thinking woman. And also would always let you know how she thought, and traveled all across the country and stayed involved in her high school graduation group and all that. And just a very independent woman. And coming from, I grew up in Canada, and I sort of saw this trailblazing personality that I hadn't quite seen with a lot of my relatives. But yeah, no, it's an incredibly independent woman, worked for a major university and worked in a really interesting language department, and always and still look up to her completely, especially how she raised up my wife, her daughter.
So really a dynamic woman, it sounds like.
And I think that contrast and that what made her so unique to me, I think was made knowing something was a little awry even more obvious when we started seeing signs of dementia and Alzheimer's.
Yeah. So when did that start?
We noticed it was sort of confusing whether it was chemo brain. She had gone through chemo for cancer and came out healthy and great. So it was all, there was always a reason. And at a certain point, especially when my father-in-law passed away, I think for any number of reasons, we didn't see it as much when my father-in-law was alive. And when he got sick and the way she reacted to that and some very interesting decisions or emotions or reactions. It's funny, I mentioned this to my wife, it's not funny, huh? But I do remember the first sign, and this is actually before my father-in-law died, and before about 3 or 4 years before she was diagnosed, but I knew something was off. We all went to breakfast in San Diego. I think we were going to Legoland or something like that. We sat down at a diner, and my mother-in-law got up and she went to the bathroom. And then I moved my seat and moved her silverware and moved her plate. And the reaction to me was so not what one would expect from someone who her age, who was not going through this. And at that moment, I even said to my wife, I said, something's not right. The way she reacted to just me moving her plate And she reacted in a way that you would react to if someone hit your car. It was a very dramatic reaction. And I knew something was a little off then. And so did my wife. And also the sort of reactions when we would go a different way in the car or things like that. And I think that the one moment that really struck me, and it was sort of a double gut punch when my father-in-law was very ill. He had a brain bleed. And I remember my wife was picking up, and this is a whole other dynamic that we also have really young kids. So we're talking about my son was 4 and a half. My daughter was 6 months old. Deb's dad suffered a brain bleed. And I remember rushing to the hospital. And Maurice, even with the brain bleed, really knew there were a couple of things going on. One was at that moment, and this wasn't because she didn't care and love him immensely. When they moved his bed to ICU, she was so obsessed with the fact that we left his jacket behind, that sort of reaction to me, I knew something was off. And even then I just thought, and I remember my reaction to his brain bleed was also, I remember being very emotional because I just saw it all happening at once. And it was those little things that really made me realize that it was important that she see the neurologist. And that's of course, everything my wife has been doing, but it was little signs. And it was always, is she tired? You make excuses, right? It's chemo brain. And then, but cumulatively and in the aggregate, it all came together. And then she of course, was diagnosed.
So that was a bit later?
That was a bit later. That was a few years later. Yes, that was about 3-4 years ago. But, you know, it's very interesting. I think people don't talk about, or maybe I'm not quite as tuned in, I'm sure, as my wife is, but being a caregiver, but also being a caregiver to young kids, this is obviously something that's going to just blow up. But I waited till I was 39 to have my first kid, or actually 36. We're all waiting. It's going to happen, right? So this is it. So the fact that my wife and I, and really my wife is not only taking care of her mom, but also now a 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. But at that point, when she was first diagnosed, a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, it's just it's something I didn't cover. My mom was a grandmother in her 40s. Like it's just an amazing phenomenon that is obviously going to become the norm rather than a rarity. And it's just fascinating.
Yeah, and difficult to navigate. The stress involved is really tough.
The stress involved is tough, and I'm sure you feel like you're choosing one over another, and it's hard. Like our parents had to worry about taking us to Little League and practices, but to have just this other to worry about, is my mom, is she eating enough? Is she active enough? Is she stimulated enough? And it's an amazing experience that I think people our age are going through now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sandwich generation, certainly.
Absolutely. Sandwich. I think it's a very interesting experience, even for the daughters-in-laws or the son-in-laws. I mean, the interesting part is I think I have it a little bit easier in that my mother-in-law can be, when she's frustrated about things, I think she's much easier on me than on her own daughter, because she knew, at least with her own daughter, it's unconditional. You never know with a son-in-law,
right?
It can go either way. But, and that's where I try to jump in for at times with my wife. I can see if it's just too much for her, I'll do my best, whether it's driving my mother-in-law around or once in a while I've taken her to appointments. It's a real team effort. And it's also hard with our own kids. I want them to have that experience of having a grandparent. I mean, they already only have one grandparent in LA, but both my parents are living in Montreal and they're cognitively fine and able-bodied and but they're away. That idea of not having a grandparent who can babysit or all the stuff we grew up with, I think is really interesting. So we try to normalize it as much as possible. And having my mother-in-law come over for dinner, and she still remembers all of our names and asks the kids about baseball and tennis and things like that. So right now it's a very interesting time where she recalls things, but she'll ask the same question to our 11-year-old maybe 15 times. And it's an interesting exercise in patience and empathy, I think, for kids. I think ultimately it's going to make them better people. I think on the one end, they'll be more empathic. On the other end, they're not having that touchy-feely grandparent relationship that's such an iconic thing, right? Like the Bubby that takes that pull, or the Zadie that takes the quarter out of someone's ear and kibitzes like that. They don't have that. It's different. It's a very different dynamic. They're becoming very different kids who understand, like, why my 7-year-old knows. She talks about Alzheimer's disease and she understands, and she'll give me a look when there's something that seems off.
You would say, why is grandma keep asking me the same question?
They ask that all the time. And my 11, they know now. And it saddens me that it's so does it sadden me? It's especially after 2 years of being in a pandemic and kids being at home, kids are very resilient, right? They have no choice. So yeah. They know now. What makes me sort of sad, it's a bittersweet feeling, is that they don't ask anymore, right? Like they know what it is. And just this weekend, I didn't even tell my wife, but we were getting ice cream. I think my wife had to step away and use the restroom. But we were with my mother-in-law, and she, on her own, walked away. She just wanted to look at the magazines at Barnes & Noble. And I was eyeballing her, and I knew where she was. But my son was actually really worried. And my son, who sometimes doesn't even love to walk away on his own, he was like, okay, Dad, wait outside. I'm going to look for Grandma in Barnes & Noble. And he's like, he's only 11. And it was a really sweet, sweet moment. Like, they're living their reality, I guess, but it's a different one. And hey, listen, I think it'll make them better parents, but I wish they had that experience. Like, we can't leave our kids home alone. We can't being babysat by their grandma. She's still very doting. She'll buy them gifts and things like that and be that classic grandmother, but it's a very different experience. And I think at this point, there's nothing to shield, but this is their grandmother at this moment. And she loves them, and she knows their names, and she knows they go to school, and she knows their grades. Like, right now is actually a really great time. It's also a time when she's so self-aware. It's also a complicated time, right? Because she's so aware enough, little things like, why can't I drive, and things like that. And this is still being asked. Can I move into my own apartment? All that stuff where you have to sort of live in her moment.
Okay, so take us back a little bit. And so she was living in her own apartment.
So in her own, a great apartment. I wish I had that apartment, but she had a great apartment in Encino, and she was walking around, but it was a very isolating. It was right at the time she was diagnosed, right? So it was very early days. She was independent, but she couldn't use the stove. We had to unplug the stove. And now, sort of revisionist history, in her mind, it was the best place she ever lived, and she could walk everywhere, but she didn't walk everywhere, right? She went to the same store, and she definitely had some help, but it was being isolated and a few different moments of where we didn't feel like she was being safe, where we decided she needed to be in a residence. But that was her last sort of independent experience, and it was very isolating, I think. And now she's not. She's in a wonderful residence, and she has friends, and in the moment, I think she loves it. I think sometimes just because it's something to say, and she'd love to live on her own. And we try to engage. And my wife has told me that it's very important to live in her world. And when she wants to get a new red Camry, like, sure, let's make a plan to go to the car dealership. It's about, I used to say, Marcia, you know that the doctor took your driver. Like, you can't drive. It's not safe. And I learned after a while that was such a pointless exercise. And she's much happier when we live in her world and talk about the 3 bedrooms she'll get eventually. And wonderful thing is, when I drop her off after she comes over for dinner, she walks into her residence and it's like a scene out of Cheers. Like, when they yell Norm, like, she walks in, they're all waiting, she's kibitzing. In that moment, she loves being there and is so well taken care of. I think we realized very quickly when the groceries weren't being replenished back at home, and just we got a sense of how lonely she was there, and she needed those activities to be planned for her.
Right. I think issues with bills and medications.
There were absolutely about, yes. You can't expect a major pharmacy to actually get things right. So pills being given that should not have been given, prescriptions being refilled that shouldn't, all that stuff that you assume will be fine, were not fine. And yeah, you remember better than me, but you're absolutely right. That was what was really frightening, to come back from a pharmacy and being given a refill on a prescription that she hadn't had for 6 months. And of course she's going to take it, right? I remember my father-in-law, when he was totally able-bodied and fine, taking the wrong medication that was given to him. People are trusting. So that was knowing that she was safe, and there wouldn't be the issue of, did I take my pill? Maybe I took two, all that stuff. You could have a dose set or not, but if you don't remember it's Wednesday, you're gonna take two pills, right?
Was it hard for you? So here you are, the son-in-law, and decisions are not exactly yours to make. I'm sure you and your wife were a team.
Yeah,
we were there. The issues that came up, they thought, oh, why don't you try it this way? Like, you saw something different.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I defer to my wife's better judgment on that. There were times when I thought, like, why doesn't she just get a live-in aide or someone to live with her and be with my mother-in-law? And it was about staying in a residence versus having someone stay in it. And I think ultimately the decision was the right one for sure. And my grandmother back home in Montreal has full-time help, right? Knowing my mother-in-law, she wouldn't want someone in her face and she would just be going, she would be walking around going to Ross or to Michael's with someone trailing behind her, and she wouldn't have that engagement. But I think the big difference is my grandmother was much more advanced when she had that full-time help. So it was a very different thing. And it made it even more compounded with the last 2 years with COVID. And do we still see my mother-in-law? We have young kids, and is it dangerous to have Marcia over when we have young kids and they might be at school? So it was a lot of that, like, hey, we're not going to have your mother around forever. Maybe it's worth it for her to, like, who knows? It's that, right, like, exactly. Yeah, it was, yeah, it's that give and take. Yeah. Yeah.
Because she's in assisted living, or she's in the memory care unit.
She's in assisted living. She's in assisted living. And they're
a communal setting where you don't know what,
I don't know what my kids are going to get. And I even worse, because I didn't want anything to happen to her or her friends who might even be more frail. There was a lot of, like, cost benefit analysis. And I think we're blessed that she moved in the October before the pandemic hit, because she was still able to get the socialization. If she had been home with a full-time aide, they'd be locked down together doing puzzles and sort of ordering in from Postmates. Like,
yeah, she would have been going crazy.
She would have been going crazy. And I'm sure she would have declined cognitively. And I think she's fared so well over the past couple of years, because there's still movies and activities, and she goes on walks and there's drives. And I think that decision was ultimately such a great one that was made for her. But there's always things. There's going on trips, and, like, that's very stressful. And in my mind, it's a very different experience too. My relationship with my mother-in-law is very different to my daughter. I think it emotionally is very different, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, she's like my own mom, but we might have a vacation planned. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, why don't we take her on the trip with us? And my
wife, that's so sweet of you.
It is, but then it doesn't become a vacation for my wife, right? And I'm saying this in a, not like, it's a very different thing, because my wife is 1000% laser focused. And it's that balance. I know my wife appreciates it, and it's meaningful, and she thinks I'm sweet for suggesting it, but it's that stuff where I need to be grounded. And she knows, she's much more immersed in this world than I am, because it's her mom, and she had to learn very quickly how things are done in this world. But it's things like that where we have those conversations, trips from relatives, and should they come in now? Is it safe for her? And there's a lot. There's stuff that for sure my parents didn't have to think about at my age, right? Like, they did not. They worried about going to work. And my mother, when she was in her 40s, actually went back to school and became a social worker, and things that would be very hard for my wife to do, right? Because she's taking care of three lives. She says four, because she says I'm as much a kid as my kids. So she has four kids to take care of. I shouldn't say kids with Marcia, but she has four lives to take care of. I mean, it's amazing. Whenever the people in their 70s talk about the good old days, I defy, you know, my parents saying it was harder. Baby boomer generation for sure had it easier than we have it right now, when you look at what we've been through.
Yeah, absolutely. You touched on something a while ago that I think is so common, which is you didn't really notice, maybe you noticed a little bit, but not as much of your mother-in-law's memory loss until her husband died. And then it really became crystal clear. And I think that's such a common scenario where you're, father-in-law is probably caring for your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
He really knew what was happening, but maybe it didn't get talked about, or it just got glossed over. And then once he has a brain bleed, as you say, this is a sudden traumatic event, leaving you now, I would imagine he died from that.
He didn't, he died a little bit later, but yeah, it was pretty precipitous.
Of course, quickly.
Yeah, no, we then saw it. He didn't even cover. In fact, I actually, the decline happened even more precipitously after as well. But it was also, she didn't have to make those decisions like, the funeral or a obituary, and all of those things that someone who maybe wasn't going through the disease could do a little more readily. That's when it was having to make those decisions very quickly that she just couldn't. It's the stone and the unveiling, and then it all became clear. And he actually frequently would say to my daughter, like, just watch your mom. There's something going on. And, but because, by the way, her own mother suffered from Alzheimer's and her aunt. So we knew those warning signs. My late father-in-law was he was forced. My wife's late grandmother was moved off from Pennsylvania, lived with my late father-in-law and mother-in-law for a while. And so he was actually a caregiver for a while at the point where he actually wasn't employed, but my mother-in-law was. So he knew the signs too. He saw it. And there were little things. There was part of it is just a mood shift and not being engaged in conversations. And she was not someone who was prone to, and she's still not, to being in a bad mood or being quiet. That wasn't her. She wasn't brooding, but it was sort of that she didn't engage. I noticed the things, cadences and things said almost exactly the same. I try to engage. So what do you think about Trump? She'd be like, Trump, what do you think I think? And I'm like, oh, but it was that, but she was good at covering it. Like she was, it was a myth. So what do you think about Biden? Biden's also from Pennsylvania. So am I. But she couldn't, it couldn't go below the surface. And it was that that made us realize that it was probably a lot more than just the results of the chemotherapy. It didn't wear off after a year. She would talk about being tired. Oh, it's because I'm tired. But it wasn't. And then my wife brought her to be diagnosed and it became very clear. And there were tough moments. She had wanted to move into, I think, a slightly more independent living situation. And I think that's where it really became clear. I'm forgetting the timeline, but I think it was probably clear to all of us that this was the diagnosis when she wasn't independent enough to move into a certain residence that needed people to be independent for the long run. And is it the Mini-Med or is that the, I don't know what the test is called, or
the Mini-Mental status.
Yeah, the Mini-Mental is right. It was the numbers being not what we had expected. And so there was a lot. I always thought the decline would actually be much faster. We still, again, remembering all of us and knowing what she wants at restaurants and writing out birthday cards and things, but there's little things that the grammar is gone, and it's fascinating and devastating to watch when the kids read the birthday cards or she has a hard time, you know, filling it out. And it's a hard thing for us to watch and for our kids to see. And we don't shield it anymore. And that's a real testament to my wife. My family's much more sweep it under the rug and go grow something horrible from all the stress. My wife is much more about like keeping it real. And I think that's been really important for the kids. This is part of life and she loves them. And she comes to my son's baseball games and like, she looks forward to it. She asks him all the time and no one now realizes it. And he'll engage. And if she'll ask him what grade he's in and the baseball and the same. And he's good at repeating he's great at it.
Right.
And my daughter too.
Same conversation over and over again.
And you know what? I don't mind them finding it. They're not making fun of her. Sometimes they'll laugh. And you know what? It's a very endearing moment in the same way that like, and then she laughs too. Like, oh, did I act? It's not mention their kids, right? So if someone mentions it or gets the tense, she'll call her he or he her. And Maya will say, you know, I'm a girl, right? You see me sitting down on the toilet. Like she'll be funny about it. And I think that just brings a little bit of levity to the home. You can't, I feel like the sort of what we did back in the day with walking on eggshells and don't talk about it is the worst thing someone could do.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it sounds like you're living and breathing the diagnosis and the effects of it. And
the kids before the pandemic, they visited Marcia and her residence. And listen, it was scary to see some people versus others and having strangers come up to you and say they know you to the kids and we went to school together. It's all very, for a 9-year-old at that point, it's a little, but it's, listen, we've had the conversation. They're better for it.
I bet. Yeah, that's true. They really are seeing what happens as you progress in Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah. It's sad. And there's, but it makes the moments where there's like real clarity and like where she gives them a hug even more special, obviously. It's so sincere.
You're talking about taking care of your mother-in-law and your kids and how stressful that is for your wife, but you know, kind of what a juggling act that is. How do you see this kind of going forward?
It's definitely a challenge and something my own parents didn't have to necessarily deal with. My mom was in her 40s when she became a grandmother, right? And was able to go back to school. And it's difficult. I think it's when you're juggling Little League with making sure your mom or mother-in-law is getting the care she needs. Or my wife yesterday, I mean, thank God for flexible work hours and work from home at this time, at least. But my wife was taking her mom for a checkup at the oncologist to make sure everything was fine. And we have kids being picked up and brought to baseball. It's just this juggling act that's fascinating. So it's just trying to find that balance where your kids aren't suffering, your own kids aren't suffering, they've got a long life ahead. And I say that to my wife. My mother-in-law is being very well taken care of. I think the margin for error is much thinner for the little ones, right? So I think it's finding that balance where you feel like a good kid or son-in-law. You make sure your little ones who are in their formative years are being taken care of, but your mom is also getting the care she needs. But it really is like taking care of and I don't want to say it, I know that that's not something you say, but it's taking care of a third life for sure at a time when your little ones really need you. It's a very interesting time, but I do think seeing the struggle, seeing the challenge, I think it makes our kids just more empathic. And it's sad, but we have to make it work. I'll leave work early and end up staying later or working later because I have to pick up the kids or have to pick up my mom from where she lives and bring her back to dinner. And it's the life we live in. We're people are dealing with other things around the world that they're not in control of. I think this is just sort of an added layer.
Absolutely. And yeah, you talked about flexible work schedule, which is great that you have that stuck in office anymore.
No.
And that's one good thing that the pandemic has shown all of us.
We should always be that way because you have to put your priorities first. And even things like, it's a different thing. We have a party and we invite our mother-in-law and it's making sure our friends are comfortable and don't feel awkward about having, it's all that stuff that's a balance and going on family trips and when is it appropriate to take her or when will it actually have an adverse impact on her? And my wife understands it more than me. When we go to the East Coast to visit family, I want to bring my mother-in-law along. My wife sort of has to sit me down and we have that moment where she talks me through I love you for suggesting it, but this is what it will mean. It will mean med management. It will mean I'm with my mom 24/7. It's going to be a very different vacation.
That's so great that you think of bringing her in when you have your friends over for dinner, when you go on vacation.
We both do. And I need to.
Usual son-in-law, I think.
No, because I saw it with my own grandmother and I have a much more fight or flight with my grandmother than I do with my mother-in-law. It's much more.
Your grandmother. How old is your grandmother?
She's 95. She's 95. She has 24-hour care. She's not very present. The word's better than me, so please correct me.
It sounds like she's further along in the disease.
She's much more further along, but she's happy. She smiles. She sings. And she was diagnosed, again, when my grandfather passed away. And he was covering for her as well. And it was when she backed into someone's car in the parking lot of a supermarket back home in Canada and forgot about it. It was nothing nefarious at all. It was just she drove home. She probably didn't know she had. And then I remember hearing that two police officers showed up at my grandparents' apartment and telling my grandfather what had happened. I think the spouse tends to want to cover for they don't want to bother the kids, right? They don't want to bother the kids. And by the way, as a spouse, I could see doing that. You don't want it to be a reality, right? You want them to be tired. You want it to be something else. Maybe it's
absolutely.
But with my grandmother, for many years, she was living independently, and she very early days was on medication, and that of course I think it slowed it down for as long as it can, a few years. But she was living independently, and I remember finding her wandering around in Florida near her apartment and knowing that something was off. And that was the last time she went to Florida on her own. And so I definitely had experience with the disease. I was living away from home when she was first diagnosed. Again, she was much older. I was much older because she had my mom when she was in her early 20s. My mom got married at 19 and had me at 23. Like, it was all very different, right? My mom was mid-50s with kids living away. I think the eldest kid was probably finishing law school when her mom was diagnosed. Very different experience.
Yeah, absolutely. So she wasn't dealing with young kids.
That was, no. And the other difference is she has two siblings too, who all live in the same city. this is an elephant in the room. It's about my wife's an only child, right? So as much as I can try to be the second child, like, it's a whole different experience for my wife. I don't wish it on. And then thank God, my wife had the most idyllic childhood as an only child and got all of her parents' attention. And I will say is an atypical only child in that she's super well adjusted. But I thank God that we have two kids. I just think having that person, so in the same way that when there's health issues with my parents, I have one brother living back at home. Thankfully, he didn't cut and run like we did. But just to have those conversations, my wife has that with me, but it's a very different thing. It's a lot of like, did I make the right choice? Am I doing the right thing? There's no sounding board. There is with my mother-in-law siblings, of course, but it's different when you're a kid, right? And yeah, it's very hard.
And it sounds like with your grandmother, they had several children.
It's three girls. They're very doting, and it was just a very different experience. And they were all very enmeshed already. This is hard. And my wife's the only side of her family that's out here on the West Coast. All the siblings are on the East Coast. It's very difficult. Yeah, there's no, and that falls on
you, that you're so involved with your mother-in-law.
Yeah, no, I try. And I always feel like I'm not doing enough. And I'm sure my wife feels the same way because it's her mom. And she's so immersed herself in this world. I've learned so much about it. And I feel like if I had it to do over, I would have approached the relationship with my grandmother very differently, right? So I just think that I was a little more afraid. I was much younger too. I was in my 20s. And I think it scared me a little bit. I think I'm now living with it. It's nothing to be afraid of. There's amazing, beautiful milestones that I think we wouldn't have gone through if my mother-in-law didn't suffer from Alzheimer's disease that we're going through. And I think it makes my kids stronger. I see my wife helping other people as well as a resource. And my mother-in-law's meeting wonderful people. She has new friends.
Amazing, beautiful moments. I suppose you could have had those with your grandmother, but 20 years ago, like, we didn't.
It was scary. And I had it before. We were very close before. I mean,
Your parents probably didn't really know to bring you into the fold.
No, they didn't. And you know what? They probably didn't. They probably thought, oh, Adam's out in New York. He's starting a new life. He's working. They didn't want to. And that's more, that's sweeping it under the rug. We didn't know. We never knew my grandfather had prostate cancer until 30 years after. How? You didn't want to talk about it. It's like a Neil Simon play, like with the You Can't Take Cancer. And they protected me. And we're trying to walk that delicate tightrope with our own kids because they're young, and I think it's making them just stronger, more empathic people. And God knows, I'd want them if they find themselves as caregivers with us.
I want them
to be empathic and understand. And but I do think the past couple of years have made kids, for better or for worse, probably for better, just more resilient kids. Sure, kids are, we're living in LA. They're surrounded by excess, and kids are spoiled, and they're on their PlayStations and Nintendos. But I think they're much more attuned to what's going on in the world than I was growing up. I did not have the depth that they have right now.
Yeah, and it's different for them. I mean, you're right. They're living in LA. The grandmother is close by. You're living in New York or in LA. Your grandmother is in Canada. It's just a whole different experience.
You were
back in Canada, and you're.
Oh yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
It would be different. I would probably be more in your life.
But I think it's also because we're the only support system in LA for her. Exactly. So it's the grandkids, it's us. Your family is so much more meaningful than any of the friends you had growing up. And my wife probably would not want me to say this, but like, blood is thicker than what you 1000% see a difference between family and friends when you're diagnosed with Alzheimer's. Like, it's the most sobering thing to see, because people respond when they get back, when they're not family. Listen, you could be friends for 50 years. If you're the same age, you're not going to find yourself. It's just the way people are. I think it's human nature. If you don't get back, even if you're not conscious of it, it's a very different thing. And it reminds you of what might happen. It reminds you of maybe the dynamic you had when it was a couple. It was my father-in-law and my mother-in-law together, and they would go traveling with friends. And I think when that ended, Alzheimer's disease or not, it changed things, and it brings up mortality for people. And I tell my wife, you're expecting, you don't expect more it's hard for people. People react differently. My dad has always said this. When people say, did you go visit Michael in the hospital? And the people say, I don't like hospitals. It's not for me. And my dad will always say, no one likes going to hospitals. You have to be there for the people. And I think most of the time, it's the family that ends up taking on the responsibility. And I don't blame anyone for it. I understand it because it's not the way.
Right.
I don't know.
Your wife had expectations of your mother-in-law's friends.
She had expectations of the friends because for my wife, the friends were
people like
friends were family. Yeah. Friends were family because she had no other family. Right. So listen, they're doing what they can and they take her out for lunch, but you can't expect the world. And I think they're scared. They don't know. They don't know if there's going to be an issue with wandering or any other sort of, and it's hard for friends.
The bathroom or,
all that stuff. And I just think family is so important at this time and so much you have to go through. There's a lot of that too. Thankfully, my mother-in-law, she doesn't want to bother them. She doesn't want to bother her friends. I think part of it is that she knows she's not engaging with them in the same way. And she might not have those reference points or things like that. So it's very hard to see that whole world. And I think it's hard on my wife because that was her second family. So yeah, no, it's very interesting. There's like, it's a multifaceted experience.
Yeah. So some disappointments there with friends, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. Has there been anyone who's come forward? We're talking about people stepping back. Has there been
a lot? No, that's the thing. A lot of people have come forward and family on the East Coast have been very helpful and friends.
To your mother-in-law?
Like family from the East Coast have been out, like my mother-in-law has a brother and a sister. The sister's coming over next month. And like, they do as much as they can. They have their own kids and they have the pandemic. There was no way to travel, but they're around too. Friends are hard. I think friends who have gone through this themselves are much more helpful and just understand. They're not as scared. I know it's difficult. And I think part of it is just like, I think it's seeing one's own mortality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is part of it for sure. I felt this way with my grandmother and I regret it. I think part of it is the sad cost benefit analysis people do. Will she even know I was here? I think it's as simple as sad as that. And I could see this friend versus, and some people just don't do the math properly in their minds. And I think they think, oh, she'll be happy there. She has her new friends. Exactly. It's a lot of work too. It's a lot of like pulling out conversation. And I think it's hard. And I think people sometimes do the wrong math when they think about spending time with their loved ones who suffer from dementia.
One thing you might consider is having her, if you're having your mother-in-law over, invite her friends over too.
Yeah, which we've done. That's a great idea. We had a birthday party and that's been very, very helpful. And we need to do that. I think the expectation that the outreach will be the same as when they were able-bodied. Listen, people have their lives. They have their own grandkids. It's a very interesting thing. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is a very interesting thing. And I'm sure your mother-in-law had tons of friends, close-knit group of friends that, you're right, kind of fall away, go to their own families for things.
It's also, they're getting older themselves. Yeah. They have family that they have to take care of. People have lives. And my wife tells me about a lot of caregivers she meets who have no family. And I mean, that must be so difficult. And I think we're so lucky to have one another. And you see it all the time, I'm sure. And I think Marcia's lucky in that she's able to be at a residence, but there's a lot of people who, A, don't have the resources. They don't know who to go to. They don't know that there are those resources like you around to help guide them. And they probably feel so isolated.
Yeah. Your situation is, I mean, you have
I feel blessed.
Your mother-in-law has the financial resources to be able to move into a nice place, a place that...
We're very lucky. Absolutely. I'll read articles. She sent me an article. I don't know if this came from it, but if they still do it, that baseball game, former like Dodger fans who end up playing a baseball game on a roof. I remember reading an article about this amazing baseball game. I don't know if it was Alzheimer's LA or the Alzheimer's Association, but I always thought, and I work in television, and I always think, God, the documentary ideas. And I hear stories of parents taking care of their own early onset children. I mean, these it's just like, it's these amazing stories that are from someone who works in, you couldn't make this stuff up.
You're in the industry, the world of television, and now you're living dementia in your everyday life. Like, do you see the worlds merging at all?
It's very interesting because a few years ago, and yes, I think even when talking about how we try to talk about it with our kids and not sweep it under the rug, I think even looking around the world. So what I do is I take TV shows from around the world and I bring them to America or to the rest of the world to adapt them to local versions. And of course, lately, I don't know, with shows like Squid Game and movies like Parasite, especially in Korea, which is a territory I'm working probably the most closely, the idea of the elderly, it's because of them being sort of the ultimate sandwich generation and of an aging population and even the dynamics of how one takes care of their elderly parents in Korea versus here historically, you'll notice as the baby boomer generation gets older, there's more content about older people. So there's a lot of dramas and even rom-coms and shows about people suffering from Alzheimer's disease and dementia and characters. And there was one show that I remember talking to my wife about. And interestingly, just having seen this got me even more interested in this world. There was a show called Oops, I Forgot Your Order. I don't know if you've heard about this, but yeah. I think it would be a great idea here. It's funny. It was one I thought would be perfect for someone like Seth Rogen and because of how involved he is. Sure. But Oops, You Forgot Your Order was a social experiment done in Korea where a Michelin star chef brought in a staff of people who were suffering from early stage dementia and Alzheimer's. And it wasn't meant to poke fun. It was meant to give people responsibility and make them feel like they had place and they had purpose. And the results of this documentary was so beautiful where people who felt like they were typically people who had worked in the food service business. They might've been chefs. They might've just loved food, but to take them from their residences and have them run a restaurant and run it so successfully. And it was a social experiment that worked. And there were moments obviously of humor, but there were also moments where most of the time it was people feeling like they had purpose and it really educated how, and I see my wife too with her own mom, like, hey, help Maya bake cookies or like just some sort of, but seeing that and I'm seeing it more and more where their storylines, because it helps people deal with it, right? There was a film ages ago with, what's his name, Plummer. Remember where he suffered from Alzheimer's disease? It was a fascinating movie, but more and more you see those characters like yes. in dramas. And I think because we're all dealing with this.
It's touching so many people. Of course, it's touching people in the industry and they're bringing it into their
I think it's a great thing in that the more it's talked about and the more it's shown on screen, the more people understand why I need to take an afternoon off to visit my mother-in-law. And just it normalizes it in the way other experiences were normalized. I mean, obviously documentaries, HBO has done so many brilliant documentaries in the past. And it's typically people who have gone through this. It's directors or producers whose own parents are afflicted with this. So it's fascinating. But I think the more we talk about it, the more there'll be funding and the more it'll be normalized and
the visibility, the education, absolutely. Yeah, it highlights the disease and it's all a good thing. We need to educate people as much as we can.
I see now how different just the support system is and the resources compared to 20, 30 years ago when my grandmother was diagnosed. I think it's incredible that there's so much help out there for people. They need to be able to find it. They need to be tech savvy, which is sometimes hard for spouses who are a little bit older. Like it's hard. And I know the work you do and it's very hard. So I think the more it's talked about and just out in the open, the better it is for everyone.
And maybe we should even mention your wife has now pursued her own support group.
Yeah, no,
I'm leading a support group for caregivers.
Yeah, she just had one yesterday, and I am incredibly proud of her. Obviously, but I was before that, but no, to have someone who's going through it at the same time must give people a lot of comfort. In my mind, I always think that must be so helpful for people. She's in it the most. She can say that's. I just went through this 30 minutes ago with my own mother, or we had toileting issues, or I had to juggle family, or this is who I call at CalPERS, or like all that stuff. I think is so helpful having someone who's in it in the moment, and I think it's meaningful for her absolutely to know that what she's going through with her mom. He's able to glean a lot out of that, a lot of trial and error, and hopefully there'll be less error for the people she's talking to, and because they have someone guiding her. It's an incredibly meaningful experience, and she takes it very seriously because she's gone through it herself. I think it must be a wonderful resource for people.
I also know that your wife, Deb, had a great idea. I think this is beautiful that she puts together pictures in a book. It's for people with dementia to be able to look at family photos, family vacation photos, all different pictures that she puts together in a book, and she calls it the Look Back Book. And because she has found that it's helpful to look at pictures with her own mother and the memories it stirs and the conversations they can have. And she's launched this business.
Absolutely. And in fact, it's so ideal for people suffering from dementia or Alzheimer's. It's actually for the general population because we all sort of need help taking that trip down memory lane. And my wife, before there was resolution good enough for my wife's been making books for 15 years. She gets that from her dad, who was a big photographer, but she makes these amazing books. And it was seeing my mother-in-law look through these books and remembering those names. And my wife would do really clever things. Like she would put the names of all of the relatives down because she would forget. So it was less stressful. So the book is, and we have them all over the house. And I know she's working with clients now. You know, it's such a great way to collate those photos that you forget about, but it's really it's that memory therapy, right? It's reminiscence. Seeing the diner that you went to as a kid in Scranton, Pennsylvania, the wedding or the baptism or the bar mitzvah, but it's also helpful in that if you're about to have a family reunion and having that book there with the people's names. And I think we all, like, it's so funny when my own parents take pictures on their phone. I'm like, where are these photos going? They're just in your phone. But to actually have a place, and I would do it now, ask your family, get the answers now. There's a lot of history that I think we've lost, especially, of course, from my father-in-law, but find out about the first love and the boy. And so when you have the photo of senior prom in 1958, you can write down the story there's so much we can do. I think it's a great exercise for kids to interview their grandparents. But yeah, no, a look back book is on Instagram, and it's such an easy way to
to engage your parent-in-law, your grandparent. Absolutely. You just touched on something really good, which I maybe want to go into as our last thing, is that if you could give advice to other caregivers, what would that be?
Definitely, like, try to find the organizations out there that can help. My wife will tell me, God, I don't know how this person did it. They didn't know about X, Y, and Z, which is why I think her group is, and all the groups that are available are so great. I think it's finding your people, right? Finding that like-minded community. So Alzheimer's LA and Alzheimer's Association, there's so many amazing groups. And I think my wife found that, I think part of it was working with you guys. Did you help Deb because of her dad first, or am I making things up?
I didn't know her dad.
But it was when Marsha was ready to move.
Right. Before when she had just moved into her apartment.
The one in six. But it's finding that community of people. I mean, one is obviously it's the cliche that you always hear about always putting the oxygen mask on you. Take care of yourself, right? So make sure you are healthy enough and have the resilience and the, as they say in Yiddish, the koyach, the strength to take care of other people first. Get that strength, take care of yourself, but then educate yourself. There's so much out there that was not there 20 years ago. And whether it's fun, support groups, talking to friends, I think it's really taking a deep dive into this new world and finding those people out there. I mean, I know the help, it's a very generous community is what I've seen. They want to help because there's no ulterior motive. It's just about helping people. It's such a tight-knit, right?
Giving community. Absolutely.
It's great.
So I encourage people to dive into it. Yes. And you said something great, which was find out information early. So have these conversations early on. So you can find out about your mother-in-law's first boyfriend or whatever.
Definitely find out
whatever it is.
But I think early is now everything should be early.
Yes.
Find the diagnosis, even if they're tired, even if maybe it's chemo brain. But I think from what I understand, it's getting that diagnosis early, which is key, whether it's to get the resources, whether it's to trigger insurance, everything early is like the buzzword.
Even like get the recipe for the chicken soup.
all that stuff, which we still don't know about her cookie recipe. Hopefully we can find somewhere. But you're right. It's all about
conversations to have now.
People are afraid to do it. I think the more we normalize it and if it's a part of life, just like getting married and having kids and I think we'll live our lives very differently knowing that it's out there. It's obviously scary for a lot of people. And that's the thing too. How much of these conversations do you have with your loved one? I think you need to gauge the type of person they are. Getting the diagnosis early, learning early. I think I've ordered books on Amazon. My wife was like shocked that I was ordering these books. And hopefully, I think I've read some of them. There's so much information out there, but it's definitely getting the diagnosis early. And my wife says it herself. And it's not, she's like, if you ever see anything with me, don't just say I'm tired. Because my inclination would be, there's no way this is happening. She's tired. Mm-hmm. And I would probably, but I think seeing how helpful it's been having sort of a daughter and hopefully a son-in-law who's living in reality, you can't do that. You have to deal with the reality as hard as it is and get that help.
Such a great point. Adam, it's such a pleasure to talk to you.
I know.
You are you're an amazing son-in-law, spouse.
Thank you.
Father, I mean, really.
Truly. No, thanks for saying that. Listen, it's hard and we don't choose it, right? So,
this is what you're getting into.
No, and it truly is like the vows, right? Like for better or for worse.
Fullest extent. I mean, your mother, you really, I mean, incorporated your mother-in-law into your life.
Yeah, no, I listen.
In amazing way.
No, and it means a lot hearing. And it's nice to hear that. I think people should compliment caregivers more often. It's a thankless thing. And I think people just assume they have to do it because, listen, it's the right thing to do when they want to do it. But listen, I think it makes us...
Not everyone does.
Not everyone does. And yeah.
You are. You're a great example of someone who has jumped.
And I think it's made me a better person. And I even, listen, it's made my kids better kids. And they're great grandkids. And my wife, listen, my wife is part of this world. She never thought like, she's a documentary filmmaker. Like she was running around the country shooting tornado documentaries or filming a bariatric surgery for Discovery. And now she's running a group. We bring our life experiences to the table. And I think that openness and curiosity is what's made Deb really great at what she does, whether it's the book or the group. And it's a journey that we're all on and we sort of all know how it's going to end, but there's a lot of fun we can have in the meantime and a lot of laughs. And I don't think it should be something that should be ignored, and we don't need to chastise our kids for laughing about when the kids make a funny noise and our mother-in-law replicates it. And maybe she wouldn't have done that 20 years ago, but God knows she has a great audience and two little kids. So it could be bittersweet is the perfect word. It's bittersweet. And yeah, it's sort of the life we find ourselves in.
Good for you for embracing it. So,
and thanks for including me in for this podcast. It's great.
Thank you for coming on today. I appreciate it. I know other caregivers will too.
Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave me a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.